Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to start off with a little Tom Fenton judicial watch. He gives us a pretty good synopsis of what's been unfolding this last week. And this is part of his weekend review. So here we go with Tom Fenton judicial watch. Here we go now.
Hi, everyone. Judicial Watch President Tom Fenton here with our weekly update here on social media. Thanks for joining in this week. I'm glad to be back this week. I was under the weather last week, so there's a lot to catch up on. Major Spygate revelations confirming the Obama gang was spying on Donald Trump. And, of course, the response from the left and the Democrats on the Hill who have been caught up in this Spygate scandal is to attack the Attorney General of the United States with abusive contempt smears. So I'll give you my feedback on what's happening there. On top of that, Judicial Watch has several new deep state lawsuits designed to pry loose information about this spy, the Spygate scandal and the deep state assault on President Trump. So some major updates there. And then we have new revelations detailing Obama White House involvement, to put it charitably, in the Clinton email cover-up. This is a result of court-ordered discovery granted to Judicial Watch by a federal court judge, and we're getting the results. So as everyone talks about the Clinton email scandal, Judicial Watch is the only one doing the heavy lifting, trying to get the information out there through court process. But first up, I want to talk about the Spygate scandal, because even if you watch Fox, they haven't talked about it enough. And certainly much of the major media hasn't talked about it enough, which is the startling confirmation and major confirmation by the New York Times last week that the FBI under Barack Obama and James Comey indeed was spying on President Trump's campaign. This is from the New York Times, dated May 2, 2019. The conversation at a London bar in September 2016 took a strange turn when the woman sitting across from the George Papadopoulos, a Trump campaign advisor, asked a direct question. Was the Trump campaign working with Russia? The woman had set up the meeting to discuss foreign policy issues, but she actually was a government investigator, posing as a research assistant, according to people familiar with the operation. The FBI sent her to London as part of the counterintelligence inquiry opened that summer to better understand the Trump campaign's link to Russia. So this woman, who called herself Azra Turk, was detailed by the FBI government investigator. I don't say she was an FBI agent. I suspect she probably worked for another government agency like the CIA, to work with Stephen Halper, who was an FBI informant, to spy on George Papadopoulos and try to entrap him, because the emails, it's pretty clear, the text messages and communications this woman subsequently had with Papadopoulos was more than about asking about whether or not he knew Clinton emails were going to be leaked by the Russians. They involve come-ons and such, obviously trying to ensnare him in more than just a informational relationship. But the New York Times admitting, and the headline is just classic, FBI sent investigator posing as assistant to meet with Trump aide in 2016. Well, you know, I could have written that headline a lot more succinctly. FBI spied on Trump campaign. So this gentleman, Stephen Halper, who had a contract with the Defense Department, was working out of London, not only met with Papadopoulos, but as the New York Times reconfirms, also met here in the United States of America with other campaign officials, including Carter Page, and then Sam Clovis, who was not a junior campaign aide like Page and Papadopoulos were. They were kind of, quote, advisors who were linked to the campaign. And Clovis was a senior guy on the campaign. So you had the FBI targeting the Trump campaign with an unprecedented spying operation. Here, not only abroad, but here in the United States, which raises substantial legal concerns, because generally speaking, the FBI and the CIA are not allowed to spy on domestic political operations. That's why they were focused on trying to get Papadopoulos overseas, because their abilities to spy on Americans are greatly eased overseas. They don't have to jump through a lot of hoops to have that done. And on top of that, Halper became so close to the Trump people as a result of his spy operation on behalf of the FBI, he was invited to the White House in 2017. So yes, the FBI was not only spying on the Trump campaign, they were spying on the Trump White House. Now, according to this story that was written obviously in to get ahead of the IG report, that's forthcoming from the Department of Justice IG Inspector General, that's probably going to talk about these issues. This report confirms that the president, Trump, was right. The Obama people were spying on him. Now, of course, Judicial Watch has been trying to investigate what Halper was up to, Stephen Halper, the FBI spy. And so what's incredible is you still have people arguing over whether it was spying. The corrupt James Comey, the FBI director rightly fired by President Trump, was on TV this week at CNN saying it was perfectly normal for the FBI to spy on a presidential campaign. Well, he knows it's not perfectly normal. But again, it's an admission that he knew. Of course, he didn't want to call it spying. But I don't know what else you would call a counterintelligence operation against U.S. targets abroad, using evidently a CIA asset to do it. Of course it's spying. You know, when the FBI investigates you, two FBI agents show up, they knock on the door, and they say, we want to talk to you. That's an investigation. When the FBI spies on you, or when the CIA spies on you, they use confidential informants, they use cutouts to have meetings with you, and they don't disclose their relationship with the FBI or CIA or other intelligence agencies. That's spying. And the fact that they are hiding from the word spying shows you that they know what they did was wrong. So we have these major revelations confirming, and by the way, you don't spy on a presidential campaign at the junior level. You have to get it approved. And of course, Comey admits essentially that he was involved in this. And of course, other text messages show that the White House wanted to know everything. So I guarantee you that Barack Obama approved of and was briefed on this spy operation targeting President Trump. Obama knew. We already knew he was involved in the assembling of the dossier targeting President Trump. So when people say well, for instance, the Intelligence Committee of the Senate is harassing Donald Trump Jr. with another subpoena. They need to be talking to President Trump. They need to be talking to senior people in the Trump White House about what they knew and when about the spy operation against President Trump. In the Obama White House about what they knew and when about the spy operation against President Obama, against President Trump. Forgive me, I'm getting my presidents screwed up. But it's pretty clear the Obama White House knew or should have known about the spy operation, unprecedented, targeting President Obama, then candidate Trump. And let's go through all the agencies involved in targeting President, then candidate Trump. State Department, CIA, FBI, DOJ, NSA, you can bet the Office of Director of National Intelligence, certainly National Security Council, Susan Rice confirmed she was involved, and the Obama White House. It was all hands on deck targeting President Trump. So we have all these extraordinary revelations confirming Spygate. So what do the Democrats in the House do? They file a vote. They vote against Attorney General Barr, a contempt resolution out of the House Judiciary Committee. An extraordinary step. They're essentially saying Attorney General Barr should go to jail over his refusal to turn over millions of pages of documents, potentially, at the drop of a hat, and just a few lines of text in the Mueller report, text that he can't lawfully turn over absent legislation by Congress, because the grand jury protected material, the Attorney General doesn't have the discretion to turn it over, nor does the House have the ability to override federal law to look at material it doesn't have a right to under the law. Now, to be clear, I understand that Congress and the executive branch get into fights. And just because it's Democrats asking for the records, it doesn't mean that the request is not well-founded. But I do know enough about the political back and forth in these legislative requests or these oversight requests to know it takes time to work through them. So you have the report issued, and then to demand immediately that the report be released, including all the background material over it, and then put someone in a contempt situation within weeks of the initial request is an abuse of power. It's an outright abuse of power.
He says specifically and vehemently that Barack Obama knew about this spying. Let's call it what it is, spying on the Trump campaign into his White House, his transition on into his campaign, his, term of office is what it is. But let's go back a little bit about John Brennan. Let's talk about some spying that he did as director of the CIA on behalf of Barack Obama. Here we go now. Listen to this.
In another major story tonight, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee has accused the CIA of spying on Congress in an astonishing speech. Democrat Dianne Feinstein claimed that in 2010, the agency hacked into the computers of her committee, which oversees the CIA. Wyatt Andrews has our story.
California's recognized.
The speech was both a surprise and unprecedented. Dianne Feinstein, the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says the CIA spied on the committee's computers and deleted important documents. She said it happened during an investigation into the CIA's controversial interrogation techniques, including waterboarding, used against suspected terrorists. By snooping on Congress, Feinstein said, the CIA crossed the line.
I have grave concerns that the CIA's search may well have violated the separation of powers principles embodied in the United States Constitution.
The director of the CIA, John Brennan, denied that the agency did anything wrong.
As far as the allegations of, CIA hacking into, Senate computers, nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, we wouldn't do that.
But Director Brennan himself disclosed in January that the agency had conducted a search of the committee computers. Here's the issue. For years, the CIA and Intelligence Committee have shared computers at a secret site in Northern Virginia where committee investigators could access classified documents. Last year, the CIA complained that Senate staffers had hacked the system and copied a document considered off-limits. That document, called the Internal Panetta Review, because it went straight to former Director Leon Panetta, is said to be highly critical of the CIA's interrogation program. Senator Feinstein denied there was any hacking and said the committee broke none of the rules.
The document was made available to the staff at the off-site facility, and it was located using a CIA-provided search tool.
This clash now leaves both sides, the Senate and the CIA, accusing each other of possible criminal violations of computer law. Both sides have lodged complaints at the Justice Department, but Scott, in the past, disputes like this have gone all the way to the president.
Wyatt Andrews on Capitol Hill for us tonight. Wyatt, thank you very much.
Now, John Brennan at the time denied all this, so he was lying again. And then later on, he had to apologize. And here's what he said then, So here we go with another John Brennan.
This morning, the White House says President Obama still has confidence in CIA Director John Brennan. He was forced to admit Thursday that the agency spied on Senate staff members. Nancy Cordes is on Capitol Hill, where Brennan denied those charges for months. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. Well, as you can imagine, those senators are furious. They say they were lied to. They say this points to a problem with the culture at the CIA. And one Democrat is even calling on the CIA director to resign.
Senator Collins, can you talk to us for 1 moment?
We really don't have anything to say at this point.
Senators got the full story for the first time in a closed-door briefing on Capitol Hill. The CIA's inspector general told them his investigation found 5 agency employees, 2 lawyers and 3 computer experts, improperly accessed the Intelligence Committee's computer files, reviewing some of the emails of committee staff members.
And the key issues are who authorized this and why they thought it was legal.
The breaches happened in 2010 and again in 2014 as the Intelligence Committee reviewed thousands of CIA documents as part of its investigation into past interrogation tactics. Staffers suspected they were being spied on after some of their files disappeared. CIA Director John Brennan denied it earlier this year.
We wouldn't do that. I mean, that's just beyond the scope of reason.
On Thursday, the CIA said Brennan had apologized to the committee. But that wasn't good enough for Colorado Democrat Mark Udall, who called for Brennan's resignation, citing a failure of leadership. Georgia Republican Saxby Chambliss wouldn't go that far, but did say,
"This is very, very serious, and I will tell you, as a member of the committee, someone who has great respect for the CIA, I am extremely disappointed."
The White House press secretary says the president does still have confidence in the CIA director and pointed out that Brennan has created an internal accountability board to see if anyone should be punished at the agency.
This is such a big story, Nancy. Thank you.
So there's a lot of spying going on. And this spying by John Brennan was during the Obama administration. So, and then he wasn't dismissed. He wasn't fired. He wasn't prosecuted. He was left in as a CIA director. So that tells you a lot about Barack Obama, doesn't it? But we've got another news report here that goes into some of this, and it's really insightful. It's just a recent interview that we had of John Brennan. And here's what he says now about the spying of domestic spying of the CIA. He says they don't do that. They only, you know, CIA, it spies overseas, but they don't do domestic spying. But I guess if you spy on the Senate, I think that's domestic. I think that would be a domestic inside the country. So here we go with what John Brennan is saying today.
Who uses the word spying to discuss authorized lawful surveillance on a counterintelligence probe, other than Sean Hannity?
Well, William Barr, clearly, and I think Donald Trump as well.
Why?
Well, I think they're trying to imply and to really, you know, indicate that there was a misuse of authorities. That was not the case. Does CIA spy? Yes. Do we spy against our foreign adversaries? Yes. Do we spy against domestic individuals? No, we do not. We work very closely with the FBI. And when the Russians were trying to interfere in that election and to change the outcome of it in their favor, we, CIA and FBI, worked very collaboratively so that we could have that ability to see what the Russians were doing and who they were working with. So when William Barr said spying, it clearly indicated that there was something that was inappropriate, if not illegal. Nobody used the term spying when they're referring to legitimate, predicated, authorized investigative actions on the part of the FBI.
So why do you think he uses it? Is it taunting? Does it signal to the intelligence community that he's coming for you? Does it signal that he's watched too much Sean Hannity? What does that word mean inside the intelligence community?
Well, I think he's playing to Mr. Trump. I think throughout that testimony, it was clear that what Mr. Barr was doing was trying to say things and to characterize things in a manner that was not only consistent with what Mr. Trump has said, but also very supportive of it. So when he responded to Kamala Harris and to others on these issues, he thought about it, and they asked him, was there spying? He said, well, yeah, there was. Well, to me, that really suggests that he already is, you know, looking at things that really did not happen. It was predicated. It was legal. It was authorized. Now, if they want to take a look at the FISA practices and other things, that's legitimate. There is a question about whether or not there's going to be all these competing investigations and how that's going to suck the air out of the whole environment. But it's clear in my mind that what Mr. Barr was suggesting was that the FBI was engaged in politically motivated spying against one of the candidates.
I'm going to repeat that, what that phrase of John Brennan here, so that we know, we can remember for sure what he was saying about spying, but no domestic spying. So here we go. I'm going to repeat that phrase a little bit. Here we go now.
Does CIA spy? Yes. Do we spy against our foreign adversaries? Yes. Do we spy against domestic individuals? No, we do not. Does CIA spy? Yes. Do we spy against our foreign adversaries? Yes. Do we spy against domestic individuals? No, we do not. Does CIA spy? Yes. Do we spy against our foreign adversaries? Yes. Do we spy against domestic individuals? No, we do not. Does CIA spy? Yes. Do we spy against our foreign adversaries? Yes. Do we spy against domestic individuals? No, we do not. Does CIA spy? Yes. Do we spy against our foreign adversaries? Yes. Do we spy against domestic individuals? No, we do not.
I hope our listeners got the point out there that John Brennan can't be believed. He's a proven liar. So, you know, here he's trying to hold up that this was a predicated reason to go in and, you know, spy on the Trump campaign plus. But, you know, there's conjecture about that, really. And what he's saying is he spied before as director of CIA. Now there's new spying allegations. So we've got real problems with John Brennan. Here we go with a recent interview on the morning program, Susan Smith and her cohort. Here we go right now.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham there explaining why he is pushing to declassify key documents related to the FBI surveillance of the 2016 Trump campaign. He says the agency was aware the Steele dossier was a political document that contained unverified information. Chris Swecker, a former FBI assistant director who served under then-director Robert Mueller, he joins us now. Chris, good morning to you. First off, on the request from Lindsey Graham here, is this a realistic request?
I think it is. The executive branch can declassify, and I don't think we're going to give away any real state secrets here. I think we're going to find out that this dossier was being shopped all around Washington, and I've signed off on many, many FISA warrants or as part of the approval process. I don't think I ever saw news articles and paid opposition research forming the basis for the probable cause for the FISA warrant. So it would be interesting, and I think it would be in the best interest of the American public to see what happened here.
Did you see James Comey last week on CNN about the whole spying question? Let me just remind our viewers, here was the exchange on that.
The FBI doesn't spy to begin with. The FBI investigates.
You said it's not spying. Why do you think Attorney General Barr used the word spying, which is obviously a word that the president has used as well?
I can't explain it. I mean, the only explanation I can think of is he used it because the president uses it.
Are you confident you did everything by the book and that the FBI, the people around you, did everything by the book?
Yes.
All right. Does the FBI spy or not, Chris?
Spying is just another word for surveillance. I think it's a silly argument one way or the other. We use it all the time. In my speeches, I describe the FBI as spy catchers and the CIA as spies. You know, you can read whatever you want into it. But I will say, this question that was asked Attorney General Barr, the word spy was embedded in the question. He didn't dispute the word spy. He said, yeah, we think that there was spying that went on. What he was saying really was that there was surveillance that was being conducted. I just think it's a very silly debate out there. It's sort of a media thing.
So you knew James Comey. You worked with him. What do you think his goal is there in trying to differentiate and try to make the case that this was not spying?
Yeah, he's rolling with this new partisan agenda that he's put together. I mean, he's done the FBI a tremendous disservice. He threw the FBI under the bus. But for him, we would be talking about the FBI's good works, not, you know, McCabe, Comey, Page. He's become a hyper-partisan, and the only friends he has, as I see it, is to generate some friends on the Democratic side by bashing the president. I mean, that's the only reason he has anyone behind him right now.
Chris, let's move to the next phase of this story. We're trying to figure out what comes next. John Ratcliffe, the Republican from Texas, is talking about the IG report that we expect will be out in a couple of weeks, I believe. Here's what he said.
Within a month, the Inspector General's report will come out, and notwithstanding what Jim Comey says, I think that the Inspector General, looking at leaking and looking at lying and looking at FISA abuse, is going to say that Jim Comey's FBI didn't perform as the law required.
So leaking, lying, and FISA abuse. Take that on.
Yeah, I've developed a tremendous respect for this Inspector General. I've read his first two reports on McCabe and the Hillary Clinton email investigation. I think he's very thorough. They're very good investigations. And I think that there is something there, and I think it's going to be a very impactful report. FISA is a process that's been entrusted to the FBI. It's a very intrusive process. You have to be honest and straight up with the judges. You have to give them all the information, not selective information, and you have an obligation to update that information if something new comes up that goes against the probable cause laid out in the original affidavit. So I think that there are some strong indications that there was some FISA abuse here, that information, critical information, was withheld from the judges.
And as somebody who signed off on a lot of those, interesting to hear that from you. I want to finish off with this from Nancy Pelosi on what she describes as a constitutional crisis, Chris.
This administration wants to have a constitutional crisis because they do not respect the oath of office, three co-equal branches of government, separation of power. They don't support that, and that's what they're trying to. That is what they understand, because Chad used the right word, power. It's about power for them.
Well, President Trump took that head on, Chris, and tweeted out the Democrats' new and pathetically untrue soundbite is that we are a constitutional crisis. He said, but we have had a giant scam perpetrated upon our nation, a witch hunt, he writes, a treasonous hoax. That is the constitutional crisis, and hopefully guilty people will pay, said the president, Chris.
Yeah, I think this is a manufactured political strategy, not a constitutional crisis. This is, and I go back to Bill Barr's testimony. He lamented the fact that the judicial process is continuously being used as a political weapon, and he now stands in the way of using that judicial process in that fashion. So they got to take him out any way they can. He's an honorable man, and I think this is just totally disgraceful the way they're going after him.
Do you think Bill Barr expected to be the target when he took this job?
I don't think so. I don't think he expected the vitriol and the personal insults that were hurled at him at that hearing. And since then, you know, he's served as attorney general. He's got more experience in his pinky than most of those congressional staffers have in their entire careers. And they're throwing rocks at him simply because he does stand in the way of using this judicial process politically. Let's go to the elections. That's how we'll decide this issue.
Okay, Chris, thank you for your time. Chris Wecker. Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you.
Pelosi and them are so off the wall, aren't they? And but it's getting serious. The Geneva and Jim Jordan and others are on a good panel discussion with Laura Ingraham. And the Geneva is saying there may be prison sentences. So here we go with this interview and this panel discussion.
All right, joining me now with reaction, former U.S. Attorney Joe DiGenova, House Oversight Committee ranking member Jim Jordan, and former Deputy Independent Counsel Robert Ray. Doesn't get better than this tonight. Joe, what does the impressive scope of this new probe initiated by Barr tell us tonight?
James Comey, Brennan, and Clapper have said to themselves, which one of us is going to pay the Barr bill? The Barr bill is coming due, and Durham's appointment means that the already occurred meetings between the Attorney General, the CIA Director, and the Director of National Intelligence have now focused on a laser that the core of this conspiracy began with John Brennan and ends with John Brennan in London and D.C. and the Democratic National Committee. This is very serious business, and for the first time, I now believe some of these guys are going to go to prison.
Wow.
You mentioned Brennan tonight and Congressman Jordan. We got some profound sound from both Brennan and Clapper. This was Brennan today explaining what's going on with this new probe. Let's watch.
It went through a rigorous due process within the Department of Justice, the FBI. It was approved by the FISA court. It went through all of those steps. What they're trying to do is to uncover something that they will misrepresent as being part of this deep state effort to try to undermine Donald Trump's election.
It was all copacetic, Congressman. It
was
approved. Went through the FISA court. You're investigating the investigators. It's an embarrassment. You heard it.
No, he used the term misrepresent. The only misrepresentation is what they did with the dossier in front of the FISA court, where they didn't tell the court who paid for the document. They didn't tell the court that the guy who wrote it, Christopher Steele, was desperate.
How serious is
Trump.
This tonight? I mean, and the other networks are poo-pooing this thing. This is fantasy land for conservatives.
I think this is very serious. I think it's Bill Barr doing what he said. Remember, when he was in front of the Senate Finance Committee 4 weeks ago, he said he was serious about putting together a team to get to the bottom of this. He said there was four key things. There was a failure of leadership at the upper echelon of the FBI. We know that's true. He said spying took place. He said it twice. He said there's a basis for his concern about the spying that occurred.
Right.
And finally, the two terms he used, I said this last week in the committee hearing, he used two terms that should scare every single American. He said unauthorized surveillance and political surveillance. Those things are not supposed
That's
to happen.
That's what China does.
Exactly.
Joe, you and I talked.
This
is what China does. This is what Russia does. Robert Ray, I got to get you in on this because they accuse Trump of basically spooning with Vladimir Putin to get elected. Okay, and yet they use autocratic, dictatorial means to surveil the Trump campaign to get the information that they claimed was going to be there. Of course, it never was there. And now we have the DNI involved and we have the CIA involved with a man as serious as Bill Barr. He was not cowed one bit by what they tried to do to him last week, was he, Robert?
Well, Congressman Jordan is right. I mean, this isn't a question about whether the procedural steps were followed. This is a question that first is exploring bias and whether that had an impact on what was or wasn't disclosed to the FISA court, which, to answer your question, Laura, is a serious issue. Mm-hmm. There's a case in the Supreme Court about this Franks versus Delaware, which all prosecutors and agents are familiar with. And it's a serious question now that's going to be explored by a prosecutor, after all. This is not duplicative of Michael Horowitz's investigation because the IG doesn't have prosecutorial authority to actually bring charges. But in this instance, now as the result of Bill Barr's appointment, there is going to be an investigation, the purpose of which is to determine whether or not any crimes were committed, which is Joe DeGeneva's point.
Crimes committed.
This is
now explaining why they threw so much mud at a man like Bill Barr. Mm-hmm. With the history and the reputation he has, what's the most dangerous thing out there? Someone who has nothing to lose? Bill Barr made a lot of money.
He
didn't need this job, right?
You never kicked the bear.
Oh, no.
And let me tell you something. Horowitz has already concluded that the final three FISAs were completely illegal. He's now on the brink of finding that the first FISA was completely illegal. Durham has already used a grand jury in Connecticut. They've already gotten documents. He's already talked to the intel people.
How long has this been going on? Do we really know how long this...
Durham's been working for a couple of months. So the bottom line is this. This is now big time. This is where Brennan needs five lawyers. Comey needs
five
lawyers.
Are they lawyered up sufficiently?
Well, I hope Comey has someone other than Mr. Richmond to whom he leaked his memos, his little
Patrick Fitzgerald, the old, another prosecutor I don't like.
Nothing like a sleazy prosecutor to represent at this point.
Another horrible. He did the Conrad Black. He's an outrage.
Patrick Fitzgerald's a disgusting.
Horrible, horrible prosecutor.
The U.S. attorney who was also looking into Jim Baker, the former chief counsel of the FBI. So that's where that investigation was also taking place.
Right.
So I think that's interesting. That's who Bill Barr selected. And it's not just the dossier. Remember what we learned 2 weeks ago. The New York Times reported that the FBI put someone posing as someone else and by George Papadopoulos.
He talked about
it. So those are two cases where spying took place.
I want to play Papadopoulos. We also have to play Bernie Sanders, who is out there tonight talking about this. But I want to play Papadopoulos first since you raised it, Congressman. I want to get you and Ray and Joe to talk about it. Let's watch.
I fly to Greece. I have dogs sniffing for money. I leave the money in Greece. I'm then arrested in a savage-like manner at Dulles with agents rummaging through my bags looking for money. So clearly this was some sort of sting operation. And by the time it happened, the special counsel was appointed.
Now, he was caught up in this. They were dangling money at him, at least. I mean, and this was, they all knew how this was all going to go. This was all rolled out according to plan until it wasn't.
They put somebody posing as somebody else with George Papadopoulos and start asking all these questions early on in this entire investigation.
And that was what kicked it all off, supposedly, correct?
Back in July of 2016. Right. So Bill Barr has said he's going to get to the bottom of it. He's now appointed someone to head that team up that he said he was going to point together. That is a good thing. Let's get to the bottom of this so that nothing like this, if everything that we think happened did, this should not happen in the United States of America, and that's what we got to prevent.
And we still haven't gotten to the bottom of the Hillary Clinton email scandal, which is the other thing they have to touch. But I've got to play this Bernie Sanders. Of course, one of the Democratic frontrunners had this to say today about the launch of this new investigation.
Trump does all of the time. He tries to divert attention from the realities and the problems that are associated with the White House or, in fact, his campaign. As I understand it, what the FBI did is they had reason to believe that there was collusion, and they investigated that collusion. So, no, I don't think we should be investigating the investigators.
Of course not. But if it's true on the other foot, he'd be doing a candlelight vigil right now, Robert. As a former independent counsel, do you agree with Bernie here?
No. I mean, the president is right at the conclusion of the investigation. The Mueller investigation is over. To wonder how we got on this path to start with, I mean, isn't that an appropriate question to ask? I mean, I'm not going to prejudge the outcome. I think, you know, unlike Democrats, you know, there's no point in singing about what may come or what prosecutions may unfold. But clearly it warranted a second look. That was why there was an IG investigation. And now the handoff is complete. It's now in the hands of a prosecutor with prosecutorial authority who will make a decision about whether or not any crimes were committed and whether or not it's appropriate to bring charges against those who were responsible. I mean, that's what you expect the Department of Justice to do, don't you? I mean, that's Department of Justice to do.
Not sign off on phony dossiers.
I mean, Bill Barr said it was a big deal. It is a big deal. I mean,
deal. Liberals used to care about civil liberties, no matter whose civil liberties were being tread upon. Trod upon. Thank you, Joe. But they used to care about
works.
This, right? Yeah, okay, anything. I'm doing that with my kids' essays every night, checking their grammar. I got to check my own. But I got to ask about something. This Don Jr. deal. They cut some deal for him to testify for the Senate Intel Committee, Richard Burr in his saddle. What is going on with that?
I would have told him to stick it.
Me too.
And I would have taken the fifth.
Why is Don Jr. doing this?
Prophylactic use of the fifth. Look. What's going on now in the House and the Senate with Richard Burr, who is a disgusting Republican chairman? I'm so sick of Richard Burr, this phony Republican from North Carolina. Listen, Don Jr. has every right to believe that what's happening is abusive and vindictive, just like everything that's going on in the House. No citizen has to take that. They can invoke the Fifth Amendment because they're innocent and don't want to be put through a perjury.
They didn't have any problem with Lois Lerner invoking the Fifth.
Mark Warner's running that committee, right? A Democrat.
That's embarrassing.
They're calling him back based on the testimony of a guy who went to prison last Monday for lying to Congress.
Cohen.
And when he came in front of our committee, he lied seven times. That's why they're calling back. That makes no sense.
Guys, I could do a whole hour with this panel. Love this panel. Thank you so much, all three of you.
Coming up next is about the unfreedom of the press. And it's a new book by Mark Levine. And Sean Hannity interviews him. And he really makes some very important points and gives us a little history about pamphleteering and so forth in the, during the American Revolution, even before the American Revolution, there were pamphlets handed out that hundreds of thousands of American colonists read that helped launch the American Revolution. But here we go with Sean Hannity and Mark Levine, and man, this is great. Coverage.
And the man who is exposing all of this, well, he's out with a brand new book. He is the host of the number one show right here on the Fox News Channel Sunday nights, the host of Life, Liberty, and Levin. And of course, he has his nationally syndicated radio show and author right there, Unfreedom of the Press. There's a reason I call him the Great One. He's a great personal friend. My brother, how are you?
God bless you, bro. How are you?
You know, what I love about your books, Liberty, Tyranny, everything, you go through such detail, historical detail. You know, before I get to these idiots that we're playing here, you know, you do remind us about the press in the past. And I remember you told the story, for example, how they treated Jefferson, the brutal battle between Quincy Adams and Hamilton. I mean, that went off the ledge in some ways. But today is very different. So my first question is, why did you want that context in history there?
First of all, I want the American people to understand that freedom of the press is their freedom of the press. It doesn't belong to CNN. It doesn't belong to MSNBC. Free speech, freedom of the press, they're both in the First Amendment for a reason. When this country was started, it was the pamphleteers, a handful of newspaper men, the printers. They were great, great patriots. And these were the men who pushed for revolution, who pushed the ideas, who talked about philosophers like Locke and Montesquieu and so forth.
Which you have done in your past books.
Which I have in my past books. But these were the people. The printing press, there were only a few of them. They had to move them from time to time because the British were trying to find them and hunt them down. They pushed these ideas. Thomas Paine was a great pamphleteer. There were many, many others. And what would happen is people would read these pamphlets. They'd talk about them at their pubs, at their homes, at the dinner table, and word would spread. Common sense, Thomas Paine's pamphlet, it's estimated 120,000 people read it. There was a country of about 2 million people. And by the time it was over, 500,000 people had read it. It had enormous influence. Why is it important? Because back then, what did our press, they didn't call themselves the press, but what did the press do? Promoted liberty, individualism, representative government, private property rights, low taxes, and so forth. And then from that period, soon thereafter, we had a party press, and it was brutal. And the press would at least be transparent. They would identify with a political party, with a candidate, with a cause. And Thomas Jefferson and John Adams would really duke it out. Some of the people in the press were actually on the payroll of a political party and so forth. But they were all open about it. Again, it was very, very ugly. Then you move into a period of, and that lasted from about 1780 to the Civil War. Let's jump forward to the early part of the last century, the progressive movement. Well, they devoured much of our government. Their ideology did. It does today. They devoured the so-called media at the time, too. They wanted to professionalize it. They wanted standards. They said, we need to be more objective. But, they said, we need to, you know, we need to have a handful of elites, a handful of people who understand the country, who understand the world, through which all of this will be laundered, which is the way they view government, too. The people are stupid. The people are plebes. They're too busy or they're too ignorant. Let us tell them what to think. Today's media, that's their heritage, but they've taken it a step further. They're social activists. That's what they are. They're being taught this in journalism school. It's not enough to report the facts. It's not enough to be objective, they argue, whatever that means. We have to push an agenda. Some of them are out of the closet, and they admit that we need to push the liberal or progressive agenda. Some of them, when you challenge them, they say you're attacking freedom of the press. And they pretend that they're still objective when they're not. Survey after survey, study after study shows half of the country, the vast majority of Republicans, the vast majority of people who lean conservative or are conservative, do not trust the media. And there's a reason for it. Another half do. Democrats and liberals think the media is pretty darn good. So when you lose the trust of half the country, you're not doing your job. And they're not doing their job. They play to a niche. Even the word objective is debated. Do we mean objective in terms of the thinking of the journalists? Do we mean objective in terms of the process? So they pretty much have surrendered that. You know, a couple of months ago, Chuck Todd on Meet the Press, he declared that man-made climate change is a fact. And we're not going to allow deniers. We're not going to allow deniers on Meet the Press. He's more than the host of Meet the Press. He's the chief political guru for the entire NBC network.
Mark, you've seen they have a whole so-called news channel that's a conspiracy channel.
MSNBC.
It's sort of like Roswell, New Mexico every night over there.
But this is an enormous disservice to the American people. Chuck Todd doesn't know the first thing about climate change or so-called climate change. You have physicists, you have PhDs, climatologists, meteorologists, not just hundreds of them, thousands of them, who debate man-made climate change, debate its effect, debate if it exists. And he has declared, we're not going to allow that on my show. So that demonstrates to you he's pushing an agenda. This whole Russia collusion thing. What I write about in the book also, Sean, is the notion of news versus propaganda versus pseudo-events. The President of the United States is really onto something. When he talks about fake news, there was a brilliant historian, University of Chicago, Daniel Borstein, who became head of the Library of Congress. He wrote a book on pseudo-events. And he was talking about the news, among other things. They create their own reality by how they choose events, how they create events, how journalists promote themselves through drama. You see it with Jim Acosta, who creates conditions where the focus is on him and not the news. This is an enormous disservice to the American people. Pseudo news. Russia collusion with the Trump campaign. We had 2.5 years of pseudo, as the president calls it, fake news. And pseudo news requires more pseudo news. So, obstruction, a pseudo event. It didn't really happen, but they claim it. 700 former prosecutors writing a letter, all liberals, no doubt. There are thousands and thousands of former prosecutors. Another pseudo event. Phony subpoenas that are intended to gather information that do the American people any good, that have nothing to do with congressional oversight. Pseudo events. This impeachment debate. Absolutely phony, another pseudo event. Meanwhile, there's all kinds of events taking place in the world and in this country that are not being covered by news organizations. There's some exceptions, but in the aggregate, this is the condition we face. This is an enormous disservice to the American people. Remember this. The First Amendment belongs to the American people. The Bill of Rights belongs to the American people. The Constitution belongs to the American people. When they say Donald Trump is like a dictator because he calls the media or a media outlet or a media person the enemy of the people, they have no idea what they're talking about. Donald Trump points out, questions them, is harsh in his rhetoric, and ought to be. And you have Acosta in a few weeks who's going to write a book and say, we basically have never seen anything like this, Sean. Let me give you a little history lesson.
It's in the book.
All of this is in the book. Let me give you a little history lesson. The sedition. Well,
I just wanted to tell our audience at home, this is a very hard interview for me. But this is honestly the amount of work, because I've been in your house when you do your books.
You see them stacked up.
I mean, it is an entire two rooms full of books and papers, and I don't know how you do it. But I'll keep going. I just want people to know how much history is in this.
Because I'm a nerd, what can I say?
No, well, we need a lot of nerd. You know, you mentioned Thomas Paine. Think about what he said, Mark, and this history that you're going through. Government in its best state is but a necessary evil, in its worst state an intolerable one. But continue.
The media says Donald Trump is the greatest threat, or some of them do, to freedom of the press we've ever seen. That is a flat-out lie. They are historical illiterates. Let's start quickly. John Adams. John Adams, one of the great founders, and he was a great man and a great writer about liberty and all things. So he and his party put in place the Alien and Sedition Act. But the Sedition Act is, if you criticize that president, you criticize his party, you criticize the government, he has the power to imprison you. And you know what? He imprisoned some journalists and he shut down some newspapers. Jefferson was furious. Jefferson was a libertarian. And he runs against Adams, among other things, against the Alien and Sedition Act. He wins in a brutal campaign, and I won't get into all the details, but he wins. And he gets rid of the Sedition Act. And the media attack him and brutalize him and so forth. That is the party press. The party press that supported Adams and Hamilton and his party and that party would viciously attack him. And he would still say, I'm not going to touch it. Abraham Lincoln, during the Civil War, through his Secretary of War, Stanton, shut down approximately 300 newspapers and imprisoned a slew of journalists, among others, because they felt they needed to, whatever your argument is, they felt they needed to because of the Civil War. Woodrow Wilson, one of the great progressive intellectuals who became president of the United States almost by accident, he went further. He put a new Sedition Act in place in 1918, and an extension of the Espionage Act. We're familiar with that. And what he and his party did is they went after journalists they disagreed with. They went after political opponents they disagreed with. They put him in jail. He also put in place an extensive censorship campaign and an extensive government propaganda campaign. The great progressive Franklin Roosevelt turned the IRS on newspapers he disagreed with. The owner of the Inquirer was investigated by the IRS at his direction. Gannett was investigated at the direction of Eleanor Roosevelt. So they would use the IRS. Kennedy did too. Barack Obama. This is recent history. The FBI, the Department of Justice, went after the New York Times.
James Rosen.
Went after James Rosen of this network. Went after 20 reporters at the Associated Press. Barack Obama. Donald Trump hasn't done any of these things. And to call him the greatest threat to the press is an absolute outrage.
This is just a primer. This is all in this book. The history is phenomenal. They even bring up in presidential elections charges of bigamy and dueling. And you show this history, and it's fascinating to see how it has evolved. But I also want to bring it into current day. And I do believe the president's branding of fake news will forever be tattooed in their foreheads because of how low they have sunk. The book's phenomenal, Unfreedom of the Press. We continue with the great one, Mark Levin.
Coming up next is Bill Hemmer interviewing William Barr in El Salvador. Very, very insightful and an important interview. Here we go now.
There are two things here. One, no one's really looked at it. I think there's a misconception out there that we know a lot about what happened. The fact of the matter is Bob Mueller did not look at the government's activities. He was looking at whether or not the Trump campaign had conspired with the Russians, but he was not going back and looking at the counterintelligence program. And we have a number of investigations underway that touch upon it, the main one being the Office of Inspector General that's looking at the FISA warrants. But as far as I'm aware, no one has really looked across the whole waterfront.
So you came into this job and you started asking questions. Did you get any answers?
Well, I thought when I came in from the outside that all the questions that I had and many other people had that would be readily answered once I got in, but I haven't found that to be the case.
You also said back in April that you thought there was spying going on in the Trump campaign. When do you think that started?
Well, I'm not going to speculate about when it started. We're going to find out when it started.
It's been said that it was July of 2016. Does that sound right to you?
Again, I don't want to speculate. What I will say is that, I've been trying to get answers to questions, and I found that a lot of the answers have been inadequate. And I've also found that some of the explanations I've gotten don't hang together. So in a sense, I have more questions today than I did when I first started.
Some of what things don't hang together?
Some of the explanations of what occurred.
Why does that matter?
Well, because I think people have to find out what the government was doing during that period. If we're worried about foreign influence, for the very same reason, we should be worried about whether government officials abused their power and put their thumb on the scale. And so I'm not saying that happened, but I'm saying that we have to look at that.
Can you say when Bob Mueller knew there was no collusion with Russia?
No, I couldn't say that.
No date given?
No, I couldn't say when he knew.
That is just the first part of what we wanted to share with our viewers so far today. There were two things that impressed me the most about where the story is now, and that is this. We now have a roadmap for where Bill Barr is going in the investigation of the counterintelligence operation. The second point is Democrats are hot on his tail for countless reasons back in Washington, D.C. I don't get the sense, Sandra and John, much that he cares much for that. He stands by every decision he has made as the Attorney General thus far. And by the way, the reason he came here was to express the level of support the U.S. government has to work with law enforcement here in El Salvador and crack down on criminal gangs like MS-13 that are causing so many problems back home and along the southern border. We went to a jail yesterday to conduct this interview. It was about 30 minutes west of the capital city, San Salvador. And we walked through jail cells with him, with members of MS-13 behind bars. It was a stunning sight to see. You can imagine how hot and sweaty it is in a prison cell like that in the middle of the day.
But he wanted to be here and make sure that they know that the United States will continue to help them crack down on these criminal elements, which has been a big problem here. There is progress on that that we can share with you a bit later in our program, too. They believe over the past 3 years they've been able to cut down the problems by about 50%. That means the killings, the stabbings, the shootings here in El Salvador. And so for these Northern Triangle countries, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, that's a big part of this whole immigration overhaul plan, Sandra and John. So more coming up shortly. Back to you guys now in New York.
Really great stuff so far from down there. Bill, we look forward to seeing more from that interview in a moment. But first, to react to what we've seen so far, let's bring in Congressman Devin Nunes, ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman, you've been listening to this interview that just happened in El Salvador with the Attorney General. And what really catches you is what he just said about how he's gotten more questions now as the Attorney General than when he first started, saying that the questions he's asked so far, he feels the answers he's received have been inadequate.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's very similar to the House Republican investigation. As we continue to pull back pieces of the onion, more and more things started to fall out that we had to follow up on. You know, even today, we continue to be in need of more answers, right? So, I mean, just in the last few days, we found out that there are emails that involve Christopher Steele that were sitting at the FBI, at the State Department, at the Department of Justice, that were not only not given to Congress. I think every American knows out there that Congress ran an investigation. Anything involving Christopher Steele, the spy that the Clinton campaign ultimately hired, should have been given to Congress. Now, how did we just find out about this in the last few days? So, and I can go on and take up your whole show with questions that I have, but I think what you're seeing is you're seeing a real attorney general, a professional, and someone who's not going to take this poisonous garbage that the Democrats and the Clinton campaign started, and irresponsible people in Congress and the media continue to put out there and poison people.
We'll see what his investigation turns up. But meanwhile, you did not see the attorney general shy away from that word spying, which we know was a point of contention and a point of criticism for many Democrats when he testified on Capitol Hill.
Sandra, it's ridiculous. Every American out there knows what spying is. This is all about narrative building by the left to cover up what they did, and you have accomplices in the media. This is foolishness. And I think that's what you're seeing the attorney general do, is just like, look, I was a citizen out there on the street like everybody else. I used to work at the Department of Justice. Now I'm back. I know what a spy is. I mean, he used to work at the CIA, for God's sakes. I mean, I've never seen something so ridiculous where the media is culpable for this nonsense. Everybody in the media ought to be laughing at these politicians who are talking about how, oh, my God, they're calling it spying. It's a joke. It's a joke.
You have to respect William Barr to go down to El Salvador and try to do something about MS-13. That's what he was doing down there. He was walking through the prisons, trying to work with the local prosecutors and law enforcement and trying to solve some problems that MS-13 has visited on America. So, and in addition, he's continuing to do his investigation. I just don't know in the end how many people are going to be prosecuted. The Geneva thinks that people are going to prison. I'm not positive. The corruption level is so high, and the corruption is so wide in scope, I should say, that they're investigating investigators who are corrupt or investigating corrupt investigators. I mean, I just hope and pray that something good will happen. I want to thank everyone out there in our listening audience for supporting us. And we're just going to continue doing these news reports. And we've been doing news clips here in the last few weeks. We hope by synthesizing some of this stuff down to a level that is understandable, that we can make sense out of this world. And that's really what we're all about here. Charlotte Littlefield and myself are out here trying to, you know, hit our heads against the wall and trying to make a little, sense out of something in chaos and disorder. But thank you very much for listening. Good night, and God bless each and every one of you. Good night. Bye-bye.